This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From the Chicago Tribune, he covers the Chicago Blackhawks. We're pleased to welcome to the program Jimmy Greenfield. Jimmy, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. My pleasure.
Our pleasure to have you, Jimmy. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Blackhawks, some of the moves they've made thus far this offseason, and maybe some of their plans, you know, a little more than 48 hours away from free agency. We start with the trade that they made earlier this week, acquiring defenseman Calvin DeHaan from the Carolina Hurricanes, and in exchange for goaltender Anton Forsberg and defenseman Gustav Forsling. When you look at this trade, Jimmy, is this one of those scenarios where the Blackhawks get the best player, so thus they are the winner of the deal?
No question. It was a situation that kind of reverse of where Stan Bowman has found himself in recent years, where he kind of had the upper hand, where he had the cap space, and the Hurricanes needed to move a guy that they liked, but they just didn't maybe have the space for anymore. So the Hawks weren't going to keep Forsberg. They were interested in maybe keeping Forsling, but they have a lot of defensemen just like them. So those two players weren't really part of their plans. And they got a veteran defenseman who is defensive-minded, which is just what they needed. They had big, big problems on defense. And, you know, they're better defensively with him and with their other acquisition, Alimata, from about a week and a half ago. It was a good move for them. They for sure got the best guy.
You know, Jimmy, when you're talking about, you know, the free agency that Drew mentioned is 48 hours away, and we talk about the two trades that Stan Bowman made, bringing in the defenseman Olimata and bringing in Calvin DeHaan. When you look at, you know, the next 48 hours or, you know, the next week or so, do you expect Stan Bowman to be busy? What types of players are you expecting him to go after? Because they have just under $12 million in cap space, and they don't have that many RFAs to sign. I think they only have Brendan Perlini, if I'm not mistaken. Do you expect Stan Bowman to maybe bring in a depth forward or maybe bring in a backup goaltender, or do you think that a guy like Joe Pavelski is still in play for the Hawks?
I don't think Pavelski's in play. He's probably going to get more money and more years than Stan is interested in. Perlini is the one true RFA. David Kampf is somebody who's been in the organization who they are, you know, he's a UFA now, but I think they're interested in signing him. That may depend on what they do on Monday or Tuesday. I had thought that when they brought in Mata and DeHaan, that they were going to make a subsequent move with maybe one of their veteran defensemen. You know, they can't really trade Seabrook and Keith without the permission, and I don't think they're really tradable right now anyways. But maybe, you know, trading Connor Murphy or Erik Gustafsson was in the cards to make room for perhaps signing one of the higher end forwards. Maybe Anders Lee was an option, but they don't have as much cap space because of those RFAs and because they're very cognizant of next season when they are going to have to pay Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat as RFAs. And it's not going to be cheap as well.
You know, Jimmy, turning our eyes back to last Friday night of the entry draft, first round went through and the Hawks selected Kirby Dach, but there was some thought that they were going to go with Alex Turcotte, who, of course, is from Illinois. Were you surprised that they went with Dach instead of Turcotte?
I think surprise is a good word for it, partly because he didn't quite fit the MO of what I was looking for them. I thought that they've been thinking defense for the last 2 years, and what kind of made me curious was that who would they take among the forwards who were available? Bowen Byram was the only defenseman who they were really considering. And then of the other ones, you know, Turcotte, obviously Kirby Dach, who they did take, and the other, Dylan Cousins and some other guys. What they liked about Kirby was they found him to be the one player who kind of stood out for what he offered. Big center, 200-foot guy who can bring the physicality that the other guys maybe couldn't. You know, Dylan Cousins is taller, maybe isn't the physical kind of player, and they just liked his skill. And in the end, it comes down to which team likes which guy. Alex Turcotte's going to be a really good pro, and I think the other guys are too. Picking him over Byram, I think, does open up it keeps the defense less crowded. They have a lot of defensive prospects. And what I liked about him was that he was more of a true number one than the other prospects they have. So while it does give them another option at center, maybe even for this year, I think they're still looking for that replacement for Duncan Keith.
Jimmy Greenfield is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Jimmy covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Tribune. You know, Jimmy, the Blackhawks re-signed RFA Dylan Sakura. He sort of split last season between Chicago and Rockford. Had 35 points in 46 games for the Ice Hogs in the AHL. Is he ready for an NHL role, a full-time NHL role, going forward next season?
You know, for his sake, I hope he is, because, you know, when you go, I think he played 33 games last year and maybe five or so the year before. So he's gone 38 games now in the NHL without scoring one goal. And, sure, maybe he's young, but, you know, when you're not finding yourself in the spots, when you're not producing for long periods, eventually it's going to stand out. And the contract that they gave him was you know, somewhat insignificant, you know, $1.5 million for 2 years, a $750,000 cap hit, and the option of sending him to the AHL if they need to. So he's an option. He's somebody who I think that they certainly want to produce, but I don't know if they have expectations from him, and he needs to prove himself, hopefully in the first quarter of the season, so he can cement a spot for himself.
Jimmy, you mentioned earlier, and we were actually talking about this earlier on the program when we were talking about the Central Division and the Hawks specifically. There's a logjam there on defense now that you've brought in Calvin DeHaan and Olli Maatta. I know you don't know what's on the horizon necessarily for Stan Bowman, but when you talk about some of those prospects that you mentioned, and even a guy like Slater Cuckoo, a veteran defenseman at 25 years old, but you've got a guy like Adam Boqvist in the system, Nicholas Beaudoin, do you expect maybe Stan Bowman to look at moving out a defenseman, whether that's a guy like Connor Murphy with 3 years left on his contract or another defenseman?
I think it's a fascinating question, because they, even before the Maatta and DeHaan trades, I was trying to figure out what would they do to improve, and they have improved, and they kept on bringing these guys. You know, Slater Cuckoo is the one guy who I think could easily be a seventh defenseman. I don't think they'd mind having him sit, but they're not going to bring him Adam Boqvist or Nicholas Beaudoin or Henry Jokiharju, who is the one of the guys who has NHL experience now, to come in and be on the bench. That's just not going to happen. So they have their six guys right now in Seabrook Keith, DeHaan Maatta, Murphy Gustafson, who right now will be the six guys in lineup most every night. And if that's what they want to go with, which is an improvement from last year, I don't think it's a tremendous improvement. I don't know how much it moves the needle, but I think it does a little bit. But it does leave out what you do with Henry Jokiharju. Are you going to have this guy who, I think a lot of people think he was ready last year and just was kind of a numbers game. Is he going to play at the Hawks AHL team next year? Is he somebody you throw in a trade to bring in, you know, maybe somebody else who's available? They've got to rearrange their assets somewhat. Now, Erik Gustafson is very inexpensive. He's in the last year of his contract. If this year doesn't get off to a good start, he's somebody who could go. I know they don't want that. And he's somebody who I would highly doubt they give a long-term deal to. So if there's one guy who I think is in his last year with the Hawks, it's probably Gustafson.
Now, Jimmy, we're a Winnipeg-based show, so we're contractually obligated to ask about Manitoba players. And, you know, I'm looking at Jonathan Toews' numbers from this season. It's his 12th season in the NHL. Most goals, most assists, most points he's ever had. Now that you've had time to reflect on this past season, I mean, it's not often we're talking about 31-year-old players who are only getting better. What is it about Jonathan Toews that was able to just see jumps in all those areas?
You know, I think he was a little... I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but his previous season was so below par, and he really, you know, rededicated himself, you know, last off season to getting in shape. He had more time. It was the second straight off season where he didn't, you know, they weren't playing postseason games. And he came back ready. And he and Patrick Kane and DeBrincat really carried the team. Taves, I don't know if he gets enough credit for who he is because he doesn't score 100 points this season. He doesn't score 40 goals. But he was fantastic last year. He excelled in every part of the game. You know, he power play, he kills penalties. He's just a fantastic player. And he'll be 31. He's 31 now. So he's getting to that age where you kind of wonder when things might change for him. But, you know, he was healthy last year. He looked great. And the Hawks certainly expect him to be doing it again next year, and they're going to need it. They can't afford to lose him for any significant period or for him to take a step backwards.
Jimmy Greenfield covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Tribune. Jimmy, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Jimmy. When we come back, we look at the Pacific Division. Goaltenders. They're all needed in that division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mara Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Couple quick news items coming in on this Saturday morning. The Dallas Stars have elected to buy out the contract of their former first-round pick. What was he, 9th overall, 8th overall? Valerie Nichushkin is going to become an unrestricted free agent. The Dallas Stars are buying him out. Would not be surprised if he goes back to the KHL, but if an NHL team is looking to buy low on somebody, Nichushkin could be a candidate. He had a great first year and then tailed off after that.
Yeah, a few things on Nichushkin here. Nichushkin, if I can say it properly, he was making $2.95 million a year, first of all. He had no goals last year.
Yeah. It wasn't a great year.
And I don't even know how that's possible, because when you look at the situations he was being put into by Jim Montgomery, Dallas Stars head coach, I mean, he was being put into offensive situations. So the fact that he had no goals is really incredible. And further to, you know, Nichushkin being bought out, we were talking about Dallas being in on Joe Pavelski. You know, that just gives them a little bit more cap room, and they've already got quite a bit of cap room. I think they've got $10 million. So, you know, you get a couple more million dollars there.
You wonder if it's a domino effect, that sort of move.
Pavelski, and I think, makes a lot of sense there.
Because he's young, Nichushkin only costs one-third of the cost of a buyout, not two-thirds of the cost of a buyout.
Right.
And in Buffalo, where the black cloud of the Sabres continues to hang over the team, they had, a development camp scrimmage today, and Dylan Cousins, their first round pick last week.
Do not watch the video if you're squeamish.
Yeah, do not watch the video if you're squeamish. He appears to have badly broken his wrist. You can sort of see the bone.
I wouldn't go that far. We're not.
Well, he appears to have broken something because the bone is in a direction that it's not supposed to be. So I'm not. You're right. I'm not a doctor.
Maybe it popped. Something popped. We don't know.
Okay, I'm willing to bet that it's not a very good situation that he's in right now. How about that, Dave? Will you give
That's
me that?
Fair. That's fair.
Okay, let's talk about the Pacific Division, where goaltenders seem to be the flavor of the week, particularly in Calgary, where they're rumored to be the favorite to sign Cam Talbot. The Oilers also looking for a goaltender to play behind Mikko Koskinen, who they signed to that inexplicable contract. They say Calgary, Callum Talbot, you like that, Ezzy? You know, getting him behind a good defense, do you think he can resuscitate his career after it sort of fell off the track in Edmonton?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because David Rittich is a guy that it's kind of going to be a timeshare situation there, right? I mean, David Rittich, I think, would still be ahead of Cam Talbot on the depth chart. But I really think, guys, that the goalie market is fascinating, right? Because at the top, you've got Sergei Bobrovsky, right? Yeah. You've got Robin Lehner. Mm-hmm. And you hear that, you know, Robin Lehner's camp is asking for somewhere around $6 to $7 million a year, whereas Bobrovsky is going to be north of that. I mean, Bobrovsky, you're hearing, could be $9 million.
$8-$9 million, something like that.
Right? So, I mean, Florida and the Islanders, it's going to be a domino effect, right? Because Florida wants Bobrovsky, but if they don't get Bobrovsky and Bobrovsky goes to New York, then maybe Florida brings in Robin Lehner. Right?
Flip flop.
Right? Yeah. And then you've got Semyon Varlamov, who's an option. Curtis McElhinney's an option. Mike Smith.
A tier lower than the Lehner and Bobrovsky tier.
Yeah. And to me, Peter Mrazek makes a lot of sense. I know I'm skipping ahead here, but Mrazek to me makes a lot of sense in Edmonton.
if you're an Oilers fan, are you trusting? I know Mrazek had a good year last year in Carolina.
To me, he would be their number one goalie. If you look at Mrazek's stats,
yeah.
His save percentage was just under 94.
I know.
It was 938 in the second half of the season for Carolina. So Mrazek is a good goalie.
Behind the Oilers defense, if they go in, I mean, Mrazek and Koskinen as your goaltending tandem next year in Edmonton.
I'd rather have Mrazek there. I mean, you got to bring in a veteran.
You have to bring somebody in. There's no question. But
Koskinen can't play 60 games for you.
No, of course not. Right? Koskinen shouldn't play 60 games for you. But if you're the Oilers and you're an Oilers fan and your goaltending tandem at the start of the year behind the current defense is Koskinen and Mrazek, I'm not confident that I'm moving upwards very high in the standings.
You know, I'm not an Oilers fan, so I don't know why all of a sudden I've become the Oilers defender here. But when you're talking about that goalie tandem, it's actually not that bad. I mean, it's not one of the best in the league. Don't get me wrong. But I've always liked Mrazek. I know, ask Dave, Mrazek was a really good goaltender in the American Hockey League for years. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying that it makes a lot of sense because Robin Leonard to me is not an option. I think he's too expensive for Edmonton. Edmonton doesn't have enough money to bring in a guy like, ideally, Drew, you'd love to bring in Leonard. I mean, to me, Leonard would be, that's exactly what the Oilers need.
Yeah,
he's going to command too much money.
You're right. And you're absolutely right.
So for me, Mrazek makes sense as kind of that second tier of goalies.
I don't think it's going to solve a lot of the Oilers' problems, but I think that's more of a function of the defense necessarily playing in front of them than Mrazek himself as a goaltender.
It's funny because I can't recall who it was. It was one of the guys from Calgary, one of the guys who covered the Flames, but he was talking about the Oilers' goaltenders when they're with the Oilers and then what they've done
when they leave the Oilers?
When they've left the organization. And for the last, I think five or six players, every single guy, their numbers, every single guy, including, as fans, just fans would know, Lauren Brossoit, their numbers go up.
Cam Talbot going to Calgary, playing behind that defense. I mean, that's a win-win from a goaltender's perspective. That's like, great, going from Edmonton with that defense to Calgary with that defense.
No, of course.
Boy, if my numbers don't go up, then my career might be going down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Tyler Myers, he's been linked to Vancouver. Is this a foregone conclusion from your perspective?
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, it looks like Vancouver has been after Myers for, 2 weeks now, right? So, and when you're talking about Vancouver, we know that Ben Hutton is a guy that's not coming back. They re-signed Alex Edler. But, I mean, you have to bring in a top-four defenseman. Myers would be a top-four defenseman in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So he's probably going to make between $6 and $7 million a year. It makes a lot of sense. And good for him. For a guy like Myers, for him to get one last big contract, he's coming off of a pretty underrated season, I would say, with the Jets as a third pairing guy. And obviously Myers wanted a bigger role here, but when you have Buff and Trouba ahead of him, well, obviously Trouba's not part of the Jets plans anymore, but this past season. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense for Vancouver to bring in a guy like Tyler Myers. And quite frankly, I think Myers is the type of guy you want to bring in. I mean, Nikita Zaitsev to me, doesn't really make a lot of sense for Vancouver. He's not really who you want. And then a guy like Tyson Barrie apparently isn't in play anymore.
Mm-hmm. It was expected he was going to get dealt to Vancouver at the draft and never actually came to fruition. You're right. Tyler Myers is better than what the Canucks have. Buyer beware at paying him $7 million a year.
It's about the term. It's not about the money.
And Drew, who else is out there? I mean, like there aren't a plethora of right shot defensemen. It's not like you have the choice of, 20 top four defensemen. So for Vancouver, they're not going to be a very good team. Maybe they surprise us and they sneak into the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team, but you need to bring in a guy like Myers because quite frankly, you don't have that many good defensemen there right now.
And they're, they've got $15 million in cap space and they've already got 22 guys signed to contracts. So, I mean, like they've got the money to do it, but it's, again, because you have the money to do something doesn't mean you have to do it.
Sure.
And my problem is,
if it's 3 years and $7 million as opposed to 6 years and $7 million,
that's the whole point. And again, like I said, look, Tyler Myers is serviceable and he's going to get paid because that's what happens in the NHL at that age with that contract. But at the same time, we're seeing a lot of value guys who are going for a lot less money, who are playing similar roles to Tyler Myers.
Sure.
And to me, again, you hamstring your team, not necessarily next year or even the year after, but it's the years after that where you're looking at that contract and you're saying to yourself, we're paying Tyler Myers $7 to $8 million for what exactly? And that to me is the biggest concern for folks in Vancouver. And we're seeing it. We're seeing the fact that Canucks fans are saying, people who are really hardcore are suggesting that because of the most recent deals they've done, they may not have the room now to take on Myers for that long term.
Yeah, and back to Edmonton. I know we got to go to break here, Drew, but when you're talking about Edmonton, I really don't think they're just going to bring in a backup goalie. You hear Brandon Tanev is a guy maybe that the Oilers would bring in.
They need wingers. There's no question you need wingers.
And so I think the Oilers are a team to watch. I don't think Ken Holland is going to go big game hunting because, quite frankly, he can't afford to, right? But when you're talking about some of these, you know, depth players, I think, you know, you hear a guy like Pat Maroon maybe might be an option for the Oilers.
You need wingers. You need guys who can play, who are NHL players, who can play on the wing for 1 year, maybe 2 years. You probably don't go crazy and sign guys to 5-year deals, but you need quality NHL wingers because what they had last year was the definition of embarrassing when it came to their wingers.
Corey Perry is another guy that's been linked to the Oilers, and say whatever you want about Corey Perry, but if you're able to get Corey Perry, Dave, for $2 million a year, plus, you know, there's probably going to be some incentives, right? If he hits certain targets, he'll get bonuses, but to me, a guy like Corey Perry actually makes a lot of sense on Edmonton.
As our old friend Richard always used to say, there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. They've been very active, and we'll talk about the Atlantic Division as we preview NHL free agency coming up on Monday. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think it was important because the Toronto Maple Leafs were concerned about the potential offer sheet, not necessarily for Mitch Marner, but for both Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Johnsson, because let's say a team wanted to poach one of those players. They offer $5 or $6 million a year, which it's clear the Toronto Maple Leafs can't afford to pay, and then the Leafs are in the position where they're potentially losing one or both of those players for a first and third round pick based on the offer sheet compensation guide.
That's TSN's Frank Saravelli talking about some of the moves the Toronto Maple Leafs did. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where we're going to preview the Atlantic Division coming up here. But first, I wanted to touch base on the Vegas Golden Knights. They made a number of moves earlier this week. They signed William Karlsson to an 8-year contract extension. He gets $5.9 million per season on his average annual value.
Great contract.
Great value. This is a guy who said, I'm willing to take less money to live in Vegas.
Yep.
I don't blame him. That's not a bad place to
no
spend your next 8 years. Yeah,
yep.
Not a bad place there. And then because they were way over the salary cap, and actually still are way over the salary cap, they had to make two moves. They traded Eric Halla to the Carolina Hurricanes in exchange for a conditional draft pick, a fifth round conditional draft pick, and Nicholas Roy. And then late last night, they traded Colin Miller, defenseman, to the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for a 2021 second round pick and a 2022 fifth round pick. So the Golden Knights are getting closer to being out of salary cap trouble. Well, not out, but getting closer to being salary cap compliant while having lost Colin Miller and Eric Halla from their forward group.
Yeah, and we're talking about all of these contracts and, you know, Karlsson making a nice $5.9 million. I think we have to give a shout out to Cap Friendly because I think I've spent at least 10 hours this week on Cap Friendly, and they actually added an income tax calculator. So if you're that hardcore like we are, you could actually, they've actually broken down jock taxes. I don't think a lot of people even know what that is. Escrow, agent fees. Jock taxes are actually the taxes that are charged in different states and provinces.
Because it's not where you live, it's where you play the game.
Right.
So if you play the majority of your game, say in Florida, there's no state income tax. But every time you go and play a game in Winnipeg, you get charged the rate of playing in Winnipeg. I can't even figure out who's... You got to have the world's greatest accountants to figure that out, because that math would make my brain melt. It would be very difficult for me, and a good thing that they're not asking me to do that, believe it or not.
Well, you're a big fan of LIFO and FIFO.
Dave?
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Okay, I don't know what he's talking about either.
It's a little financial accounting. No big deal. I took financial accounting and managerial accounting. And
How's that working out for you professionally?
Last in, first out. First in, first out.
Oh, nice.
LIFO, FIFO.
Yeah, you are LIFO, FIFO. Out with you is what I'm going to say right now. Another player placed on waivers for purposes of an unconditional buyout, Ryan Spooner.
Yep.
He was with Vancouver. He played last year with the Rangers. He played last year with the Oilers. Apparently he went to Vancouver, though none of us can remember that. He's being bought out by the Canucks. Let's look at the Atlantic Division. The Maple Leafs, obviously, one of the big teams in that division. They got some business done last night, signing Kasperi Kapanen to a 3-year, $9.6 million deal, and then signing Andreas Johnsson to a 4-year, $13.6 million deal. Both those guys, reasonable cap hits, but you also have to think that if push comes to shove and, you know, the Leafs need some salary cap space, those guys, plus a guy like William Nylander, might be the guys who are on their way out, depending on what happens with Mitch Marner and his contract. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talked about this earlier. Mitch Marner, he's going to get paid, and he's going to get paid by the Leafs. But we all know what the Leafs need. They need to bring in a top four defenseman.
Yeah.
Right? And you look at Jake Muzzin and you look at Morgan Riley. I mean, these are great defensemen. But after that, it really thins out. And you talk about, you know, some of the defensemen in their system. Timothy Liljegren, I know Dave is familiar with him, had a good season for the Toronto Marlies. Or you talk about a guy like Rasmus Sandin, right? Another guy in the Leaf system. But are those guys really ready to take the next step? Maybe, but you got to think, Dave, if a guy like Timothy Liljegren is playing in your top six, he's going to play sheltered minutes, right? Like, he can't step right into a first pairing or second pairing role. It's very rare that a guy can do that, right? So when you're talking about that Leafs defense, to me, that is where you have to be concerned about, like, say whatever you want about, you know, how much money Mitch Marner is going to make. The way that defense is constructed right now, after Morgan Riley, after Jake Muzzin,
still don't have enough.
It's just not enough. I mean, they're set. Their forward group and goaltending, I mean, they're set.
Yeah.
I mean, Freddie Anderson is a top 10 goalie in the league, and we know how many different offensive weapons the Leafs have. But to me, Kyle Dubas still has to figure out that defense.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. They're not going to have the money to figure it out necessarily. So they're hoping beyond hope that one of their internal options really develops at a rate faster than is expected. Because, I mean, you're also talking about trading Nikita Zaitsev, who is definitely overpaid, to try and free up some room there. But, I mean, Zaitsev at least is a NHL defenseman. You're not sure that your other guys are NHL defensemen. So the Leafs are.
But if you trade Zaitsev, Drew, and you're going to lose Jake Gardner, because Jake Gardner is going to sign with another team.
Yeah, the Leafs can't afford him, like the Jets can't afford Tyler Myers.
So who are you bringing in? Unless, as I mentioned, you're bringing in up guys from the Marlies, Dave.
Or Ron Hainsey gives you a discounted one-year deal or something like that. But I mean, Ron Hainsey, I mean,
he's important
to this Leafs defense.
Well, I just, you know, at this point in his career, Hainsey's a third pair guy.
Right.
Right? Like, he just can't play top 4 minutes. He had a great career. He was Winnipeg Jet and all that. But, like, you know, Travis Dermott is a guy that's probably a good candidate to play in the top four if they don't bring anybody in. I really like Dermott's game, actually. It was a good junior player in the Ontario Hockey League. But I look at that Leafs team and, you know, all of this speculation about Mitch Marner, I mean, he's staying. He's going to get paid $10 or $11 million a year. But to me, if the Leafs want to take a next step, you know, get to the second round, get to the Eastern Conference final, I mean, you got to bring in a top four defenseman. And Kyle Dubas and Brendan Shanahan are focused on that. As you mentioned, they just don't have any money right now, so they're going to have to move another player out.
We'll see how they play that out, of course, because that'll be talked about ad nauseum as we get ready for Monday's coverage of NHL free agency opening up. It's going to be, actually, it's less than 48 hours away from now, 47 hours and 50 minutes if you want to keep your countdown clock accurate. Moving to the other teams in the Atlantic Division, the Florida Panthers, we know that they have been the heavy favorite for both Bobrovsky and maybe to a slightly lesser extent Artemi Panarin. Wouldn't be a surprise to see Panarin and Bobrovsky end up there, but we know that with Luongo retiring, with James Reimer rumored to either be on the trade block or bought out, Bobrovsky is their number one target, and from my perspective, it would be shocking if Bobrovsky ends up anywhere other than with the Florida Panthers.
I mean, you can see it, right? These guys are tweeting out pictures of going to South Beach and heading there, and I think it's you know, a foregone conclusion that you're going to see one, if not both, of these guys wearing Florida Panther uniforms this upcoming season. And, you know, good for Florida. They've managed to clear that kind of space, and they've got what, almost $20.5 million in cap space for the upcoming season. So I think from their perspective, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to land a big fish with some really nice pieces already in Florida. So they've really set themselves up. You know, we saw they've kind of been nibbling at the edge of the playoff race for the last few years, and really these two guys will jumpstart that them right into the conversation.
You know, Florida is really interesting because, as you mentioned, Panarin and Bobrovsky, there's a really good chance that the Panthers sign those two guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got $23 million in cap space, that's basically all gone, right? And James Reimer, the rumor is that he's either going to be traded or he's going to be bought out.
Yeah.
And it will be one of those two, right? And then you've got a guy like Sam Montembeau, who is their top goalie prospect in the system. Mm-hmm. So if you bring in Bobrovsky, Montembeau is a guy that's still on his ELC, right? But when you talk about, you know, other players,
he's actually an RFA,
RFA.
But he's not going to get a lot of money.
He'll make a million or something like that, right?
Exactly.
He's not going to make a lot of money, certainly much less than James Reimer. That was my point.
Yes.
At $3.4 million. But when you're talking about, you know, they've only got 14 players under contract right now. Mm-hmm. 23 guys is the number of players that they have to have signed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about, you know, Riley Sheahan, Jamie McGinn, Troy Brower is a UFA, I mean, all those guys aren't expected to be back. So it's going to be really curious to see what the Florida Panthers do, because we know that there's a good chance they bring in the big fish, Panarin, Bobrovsky. It might be someone else, because Bobrovsky, there is a chance he signs with a team like the Islanders. But the point is,
I'd rather be top heavy with elite talent than middling through four lines of my forward group.
Well, Panarin and Barkov together on the top line is so scary to the rest of the NHL. I mean, Barkov was dangerous as it is, but if you put Artemi Panarin on his wing, I mean, look out.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see if some teams actually, to Ezzie's point, have to use 22 players if you want to, you know, have a roster of 22 and not have 23.
That's not a long-term solution.
No, but I mean, the point is that it gives you a little bit of cap, you know, flexibility. And, you know, I mean, you'd see teams like Winnipeg, for example, where they have the team in the same market.
Sure.
It makes it a lot easier to do things like that. I'm just saying, if you're a team that's up, we're not talking about this with respect to the Panthers, but I'm saying if you're a team that's up against it,
it's an option. If you can get a guy back and forth pretty quickly,
that's all I'm saying.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, they've been talked about as maybe.
Speaking of, exactly.
Talking about a team that might be a player in free agency. I can't see it. I just think that they have to take care of their own business more than anything else, Ezzie.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about Braden Coburn, he was actually re-signed to 2 years. I wasn't sure if they were going to bring him back, but he gave him
a good deal also.
Right, and Anton Strålman and Dan Girardi, they're out the door, right? So when you talk about the Lightning, I mean, Braden Point, we talked about it. He's going to eat up so much of that space along with Anthony Cirelli.
Sure.
Right? So, Joe Pavelski is a guy that's linked there, but somebody has to...
Tyler Johnson is the guy who's linked to maybe go out in a trade.
No, but if Pavelski comes in, Johnson or someone making a similar amount of money, whatever he's making, $4 or $5 million a year, yeah. I mean, for money to come... if money comes in, money has to go out, unless you're a team like Colorado, Columbus, Ottawa, who has all of this cap space. But the Lightning don't have that, right? Because they know, I mean, Julian Brisebois knew that Braden Point was going to get a huge raise to, you know, whatever, $7 or $8 million a year after the season that he had, right?
And so, they need to hold on to money for Sorelli's actually is an RFA next season, but you need to you need to keep money available for him.
Sorry, I thought Sorelli was a pending or an RFA now. He actually has 1 year left, but the point is still Point is going to eat up a lot of that cap space. So I agree, Pavelski could be an option there, but I don't see the Lightning quite honestly being that active, but just because I said that, Pavelski's probably going to sign with them.
And the other thing to also factor in is that they've got probably one of the best AHL teams in the Syracuse Crunch.
Yep,
so I mean, they've shown that they've been able to develop players within their own system, and continuously for the last number of years now, Tampa Bay and Syracuse have been either a top or near the top of the league consistently.
Well, they signed Nolan Foote. I mean, he was the first round pick of this past draft to sign. He signed very quickly,
which gave them 2 feet.
You've been looking to use that all day long.
Some new listeners didn't hear me make the joke last week.
You made the joke.
Shawnee wasn't here last week. He didn't hear me make the joke.
Fair enough. It wasn't that good of a joke. You might have wanted to keep the powder dry on that one. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the Lightning, you know, they're going to be, you know, if they can get somebody to take Tyler Johnson and his $5 million a year for the next 5 years off their books, they'll be glad to do that. And, you know, maybe the Canucks will give them another first round pick for for that. I still can't get over that they got a first round pick for JT Miller last week at the draft. I think that's still astounding. When we come back, we're going to focus our attention on the Metropolitan Division. A lot of teams in that division are looking to line up for Artemi Panarin. We talk about the Metropolitan Division in our preview of NHL free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Saturday morning and we're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Artemi Panarin, I think he's the best offensive player available right now. He can play in a variety of systems. He can play with good players. He can play with players that need a little bit of help, and he can help drive a line on his own. The best offensive player available this year's UFA class, Artemi Panarin. I'd be comfortable going 7 years for $77 million or whatever it takes to get him. He's my kind of guy.
TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson, $11 million a season for Artemi Panarin. Do not be surprised if that's what it ends up being.
The bread man.
The bread man's going to have a lot of bread come Monday morning.
Do you think, like, Florida or the New York Islanders or the New York Rangers are a little bit reticent to acquire Panarin just because there's a lot of carbs in bread?
That was one of your worst jokes of all time.
I mean, that was like a lead balloon right there.
Yeah. I mean, you built that up. You were like so excited to get it out.
And
like,
oh, well, no, I mean, bread. I mean, I love bread. I love I love my bagels, but I'll tell you what, it's not good for you.
Explaining the joke is not going to make it any funnier.
Yeah, it's going to be like, Ezzy, this is, you're just digging right now. Yeah. Take the shovel out of your hand.
I think the Rangers need to figure out which way Panarin shoots first.
That was a big faux pas. You know, if you're trying to sell a guy on your team, you know, maybe get the video and the picture.
It's true, Shawnee.
Yeah, if you missed that, it was on the big picture up on the Jumbotron at Madison Square Garden, and a little bit of an oopsie by the New York Rangers.
Can you
there.
Imagine if the Rangers, after acquiring Jacob Trouba, after acquiring, well, drafting Kaapo Kakko, then they bring in Panarin?
It'd be good. That'd be a good offseason for the Rangers and general manager Jeff Gorton there. That's what that would be.
Unfortunately, the bread man wants to go back with the guy that gave him the nickname, Joel Quenneville.
Well, you don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
You think
that's well documented. Joel Quenneville gave him that.
No, not the nickname that he's going to end up in Florida. Oh.
Yeah. I was like,
I do.
It was like watching two cars slowly approaching each other. I could see where Ezzy was going. I could see where Drew was going. And then I realized, no, they're not going to collide. They're going to completely miss the point of the other. Never mind.
This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. And clearly, based on the last little interaction, we know comedy. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com tonight. Rumors, Kate Quigley in town. It's her last night. She's been absolutely killing it to great crowds. You can get your tickets now. RumorsComedyClub.com. Two shows tonight. Get them before the tickets are all sold out. So we've talked about Panarin. We talked about him going to Florida. There's rumors about, of course, the Rangers. There's rumors about the New York Islanders.
Well, I think the Islanders have to be second after Florida. I don't really think the Rangers, for me, are really high up on Panarin's list.
The Islanders are more of a favorite than the Rangers?
Well, and the reason why I say that, and Pierre LeBrun and Craig Custance, both of The Athletic, of course, reporting this, because it's believed that Panarin and Bobrovsky are a package deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the Islanders are hot after Bobrovsky, and so Panarin makes a lot of sense, right? And they have the cap room, but I really do believe that they're going to Florida. I've thought all along that Panarin and Bobrovsky are going to Florida, guys. It makes so much sense, right? They cleared up all of that cap space towards the end of the year.
Yeah, the trades with Pittsburgh in particular.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just makes so much sense. They've got that cap space, and you know, Dale Tallon, Florida Panthers ownership, they've mentioned that they want to spend money. They want to get back into the playoffs, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if you bring in Panarin and Bobrovsky, I mean, you're back into the playoffs next year. I don't see any way Florida, and I've been high on Florida for the last couple of years, and I really don't think it, if you bring in a guy like Panarin, like, I think Panarin could score 100 points playing with Barkov.
I would agree.
I really
that.
Do.
I mean, it seems like such a smart decision to do. And I mean, Panarin, the ball's in Panarin's court. Look, he's going to say, all these teams are basically going to say to him, you know, put in whatever millions of dollars you want on the contract and we're going to sign it.
Yep.
10, 11, 12. Yep. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he got up to $12 million a year.
And how good is that Barkov contract? Like,
well, the Barkov,
$5.9 million.
It looks incredible. But if you're a team like the Rangers, I think it's not so big of a deal because they're clearly in a rebuild and you get Kakko.
A modified rebuild.
But if you're the Islanders and let's say you miss out on Panarin, and I would expect that you're probably going to miss out on Panarin.
There's a chance, but I know what you're saying.
Doesn't it become imperative to re-sign Anders Lee?
Yeah, but I don't think they can afford it. Like, I think
Then what are they spending their money on? They have $21 million in cap space.
I think a goalie. Well, and that's why Robin Lehner, it's not a foregone conclusion that Lehner's gone.
Well, Arthur Staple said that it seemed for a while, there maybe 2 weeks ago, that both sides were going to come to an agreement. Lehner said that, you know, I'm not focused on playing anywhere else. He had this great season. He sort of he rebounded his career. We heard his inspirational speech at the NHL Awards. It was a great year for Robin Lehner.
That was all kidding aside, that was the best speech I think I've ever seen a hockey player give.
Yeah. I mean, he spoke honestly.
Well, and he was heartfelt.
And heartfelt about his struggles with mental health, and he was so powerful, the speech that he gave. It seemed like the Islanders need a goalie. They have this great goalie who had a great year with him.
I don't get it. I mean, I would give Lehner $7 million a year, no problem.
Really? I mean, based
look at the year. He was a Vezina finalist. Yeah. He won the Jennings Trophy with Thomas Greiss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it's kind of like the Islanders are between Anders Lee and Robin Lehner. It's like they don't want to give Robin Lehner that extra $2 million because they want to keep Anders Lee. But now they could lose both. Like if the Islanders lose Anders Lee and Robin Lehner, that's your captain.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of this talk about, you know, Bobrovsky possibly going to New York. Like, they've been searching for a goalie for so long. Now they finally have it. Robin Lehner has this career year. Like, just give him the money.
Well, from my perspective, if you're Robin Lehner, and let's say, and you know, talks have broken off with the Islanders, and you think that you're going to go to free agency on July 1st, and let's assume for this exercise that Bobrovsky goes to Florida, as we all expect. Who's in the market for a big money goaltender on a long term deal? I don't think Columbus is, because you know Columbus has that.
Columbus has a good pipeline.
They have Elvis. Yeah. I forget what his last name is.
Merz Lickens.
Yeah, there you go. They expect him to be their number one goaltender for the future. So if Lehner,
I still think they need a veteran there with Korpisalo.
I agree, but I'm saying they're not in the market for Lehner on a six year deal.
You're saying you're not getting the term.
Who's paying Lehner? A big money deal. There's two teams that strike me as needing a goaltender that are willing to pay big money for a goaltender. It's Florida and it's the Islanders.
Right. I think you'd throw in Carolina, but I don't think Carolina wants to spend that much. That's the problem.
Right. And they just signed Nedeljkovic. Yeah, Nedeljkovic to a.
And they've got Forsberg, right?
Yeah.
So they've got some good depth there as well in the organization.
And earlier today, Don Waddell came out and said McElhaney's obviously going to hit free agency. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to go back to Carolina. There's still a possibility.
No, you're Mrazek right.
Mrazek goes back to Carolina.
You're absolutely right. The way I look at it, if Bobrovsky signs with Florida, and you know all indications right now point to Panarin and Bobrovsky signing with Florida.
Yeah.
I think you have to keep him.
Well, and isn't Lehner
I'm talking about.
Isn't he boxed in at that point in time a little bit? You know, who else is paying him, you know, if right now there's a, and I have no idea how much of a contract is on the table, but once July 1st happens, and once Bobrovsky makes his decision, it seems like Leonard's market shrinks considerably on a multi-year deal for any team in particular. I mean, the Oilers aren't going to pay him, you know, give him 6 years and $6 million, because they, you know, that would be too much money given the ridiculous contract they gave Koskinen. The Oilers are looking for a $3 million goaltender or $4 million goaltender.
It could be that he's just simply gambling and he's simply willing to put it on the line and wait to see what happens with Bobrovsky, knowing that he's the next guy after him to probably get signed. And maybe the Islanders come calling and they see what happens with Lee and they say, okay, well, now we have to solidify our goaltending. And we, you know, that was one of the reasons why we did so well last season. So, you know, they're able to come to terms. It could just be a game of chicken.
Yeah. It seems like that Leonard, from my perspective, though, is playing with a little bit with some fire there.
Oh, I agree.
In going to July 1st. I don't think the market is necessarily going to be there.
I think the Islanders are playing with fire by not re-signing him, because if you don't get Bobrovsky, you don't get Leonard. I mean, now you're into the kind of the second tier of goalies. You're getting into the Semyon Varlamovs, the Mike Smiths.
But I think there's room on the market for one goaltender at a multi-year heavy, you know, $6-8 million contract. That goaltender is going to be Bobrovsky.
Yeah, but Bobrovsky, Leonard, you're talking more like $7 million.
I don't think that he's going to get it.
But Bobrovsky wants like $9 million.
Yeah, Bobrovsky's going to get whatever he wants, $9 million, $8.5-9 million from the Panthers. I don't know that anyone's going to pay Leonard $7 million on July 1st.
But my point though is, Leonard was great on the Islanders.
Absolutely.
Right? We already talked about all the accolades, the Jennings, the Masterton, you know, mm-hmm. nominee for the Vezina, all of that. Like, what I don't get is why Lou Lamoriello isn't more than happy to give him that money, because I think he's worth it. I mean, Leonard's a number one goalie.
I think that
that's just my point. Like, why are you even looking at Bobrovsky? You can get Leonard for $7 million. Like, is Bobrovsky that much better than Leonard?
I think he probably is, but I think if you're Lou Lamoriello, you're looking at the goaltender market and you're saying, you know, there aren't a lot of options for Robin Lehner. I've got him boxed in, so maybe I can get him.
You don't
for
play hardball with Lou Lamoriello.
I think Lamoriello is looking at the situation and says, you know what? You don't have very many options. I can get you for $5 million. I don't have to pay you $7 million. And I think that's probably where the loggerheads
are. That's a good point.
Because where else is he going to go? Who else is in the market for a $7 million goaltender? And I don't think anybody is. And that's the problem that Robin Lehner is running into right now.
Yeah, and he's coming off the $1.5
million. Is Ken Holland possibly looking at buying out a Milan Lucic to make a little bit more room to bring in a guy like Lehner?
Are you going to pay Koskinen and Lehner a combined $10.5 million?
Yeah, well, that's a Peter Chiarelli move, right? Like, I mean, that's not a Ken Holland move.
He'll buy out Koskinen. He'd be better off buying out Koskinen than he would be buying out Lehner at that point in time. I mean, anyways, we know that the Oilers are a disaster. When we come back, Craig Ludwig is going to join us. You know, Craig Ludwig, of course, is a Stanley Cup winning defenseman with the Montreal Canadiens and the Dallas Stars.
Two cups.
Two of his former teammates are entering the Hockey Hall of Fame, Guy Carboneau and Sergei Zubov. We'll talk about that next with Craig Ludwig. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290. Do like this texter did, said, if I said anything I wanted to about Corey Perry, I think that means if I said everything I wanted to about Corey Perry, you couldn't read this text on air. So he censored himself, which is very nice, but he doesn't seem to be a fan of Corey Perry. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Craig Ludwig. You know Craig, of course, is a Stanley Cup winning defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens and a Stanley Cup winning defenseman for the Dallas Stars. Craig, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. My pleasure.
Our pleasure to have you, Craig. Obviously, we wanted to bring you on, talk about a couple former teammates of yours who were inducted or going to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. The announcement came out earlier this week. That's both Guy Carboneau and Sergei Zubov. You know, as a former teammate of these two players, when you hear that guys you played with, in case of Carboneau, you played with him in Montreal and in Dallas, do you feel sort of a sense of pride in seeing your two former teammates get awarded to the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Oh, 100%. And I think when you date back to our Cup in 99, that makes six of them that are Hall of Famers on that team. So if you want to know how and why we won that Cup, it's because of things like that. But yeah, you know, for sure. I mean, I think I always respected both of these guys, obviously, and Carbo breaking into the league back in, you know, when we started here in Montreal, you could see this coming. I know it's taken him a long time to get there, maybe a little bit longer than some of us expected, especially for Zuby, probably more than Carbo. But, you know, I think if you look at Carbo and you saw him as a young kid coming in, and you talk about a player that did what you're supposed to do in order to play in this league. I mean, he came in as a high point guy out of junior and then came in and turned into a shutdown guy and obviously did that better than a lot of players have ever done it before. I know he had a great mentor in Bob Gainey, but besides that, his commitment and all that kind of stuff, is he's a leader, and you could tell he was a leader. And there was a reason that when Bob Gainey again was our general manager here in Dallas, that the years leading up to it, we were getting better and better, and I think he started to look around and see what the pieces were, and there was a piece for Carbo here, and that's for sure. I mean, he brought his leadership and what he did as a captain and a player in Montreal in a tough market. You wanted that quality inside your locker room.
You know, Craig, just sticking with Guy Carboneau, and we want to ask you about Sergei Zubov as well, obviously a tremendous offensive defenseman, but you have a really special relationship with Carboneau because, of course, you guys broke into the NHL with the Montreal Canadiens, and then Guy Carboneau followed you to Dallas. And when you talk about Guy Carboneau and you know, that team in 1999, obviously, you know, everyone thinks of, you know, Brett Hull and, you know, the goal and, you know, how good Mike Modano and Jamie Langenbrenner were, but, you know, players like Guy Carboneau and Yuri Lehtinen were such big parts of that team because they were oftentimes tasked with shutting down the other team's best forwards.
Yeah, and you know, I think a good example of Carbo was in his leadership and being at the age that we were, you know, toward the later end of our career. I knew there was a game, and I don't know who it was, and I think it was Colorado, but whoever was out against the top line from the other team at that time, I think they were trying to get Modano and those guys against the top line of the Avs, and it wasn't working in a couple games. And Carbo, with his confidence, went in and said, hey, let me do it. You know, and so he wasn't afraid to – I think that's how you – sometimes you sum up one of the qualities of leadership is you're not afraid to say something and then follow through with it. And Carbo went in, and he wanted that assignment, and he took it and ran. And just because of his age, it didn't mean that he couldn't do it. He was one of the players, you know, in my opinion, that was able to adapt to everything. And as you get older, your game isn't as fast as it always was. And I don't think anybody's ever going to accuse Carbo of being one of the fastest forwards out there, but he was smart. His hockey IQ is what got him, you know, to where he gets into the Hall of Fame, and the longevity that he had is because he was able to you know, for a defenseman, you're always trying to get to the spot that a high-end forward wants to get to first. And once you're able to do that, you make him change his route, and he goes to plan B. And Carbo always had the ability to make sure that he knew where people wanted to go first, whether it was on a forecheck or setting up, and he basically dictated how he wanted people to play. And I think it was a heck of a quality in Carbo. And then that's what gives you that longevity. And there's something about, you know, being a smart hockey player as you get older, and you can still play in a lot of those same similar situations.
Well, Craig, you made the move with the North Stars from Minnesota to Dallas, and a few years later you were joined by a defenseman named Sergei Zubov. What was it like when he joined the team? What kind of influence did you have on him, and did you see him as a future Hall of Famer?
Well, I had absolutely no influence on that. the only influence I had is what not to do on the off ice. So, and how not to take care of yourself at night. I had funny because I had Carbo and I had Zuby and like guys like Chelios and Larry. I don't know what the common denominator is, but I was roommates with all those guys. So they knew what not to do, and I think that's what got them to where they are. But I'll tell you what, with Zuby, it was day one. I was talking to somebody, one of our reporters here from Dallas yesterday, and I said, you know, when you don't play against a player as often as you do if they're in your conference, in your division, and so on, you don't really appreciate how good they really are. Day one, when Zuby got here, and I was fortunate enough to be a partner of his, we just stared at him. I mean, we couldn't believe, at least I couldn't, and I know a lot of other guys too, couldn't believe the skill that he had. You hear about a guy, I don't know if he was overshadowed by some other defensemen that were Norris guys coming in, but it was amazing to us how that wouldn't be more talk about this guy, because he had the puck on a string. He reminds me in a way, but a lot different way, with Chelly. When I played with Chelios in Montreal, I was always afraid because pucks in the offensive zone, Chelly had the ability to stand up, knock pucks out of the air on the offensive blue line, coming around the glass, and I was always the guy that was always trying to sense more danger than most people, and so I would be heading out of the zone trying to get back because I was sure there'd be a 2-on-1, 3-on-1 coming at me. And Chelly had this ability to be able to knock a puck out of the air, switch hands, take a shot, keep it in that way, knock it down with his glove. And then I get Zuby, and it was different, but it was similar, because Zuby had the ability to just stand on that blue line with his feet on the other side of the offensive blue line, the puck just dancing on the blue line, and he had ice in his veins. And I was like, there's no way he's keeping this puck in here, and I got to sense that danger again. And I'll tell you what, 9 out of 10 times, he made an incredible play. And he just had that uncanny way to pass the puck, to find the seams. You know, and coming from me is one thing, but if you'd be talking to guys like Mike Modano and Brett Hull and players like that, that they just loved to be on the ice with them because you just knew that it was a pinpoint pass. Just get to a spot. He'll find a way to get it. Like a great quarterback in the NHL. They found that seam, and you just arrived there. I'm going to make sure you get the puck. So it was a joy to play with him because there was only one plan A in my game, and if I touched it and I had it on my stick more than 2 or 3 seconds, there was a problem because it was going over to Zubov, and from there, it was usually a clean exit out of our zone.
Craig Ludwig is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Craig, of course, is a Stanley Cup winner with both the Montreal Canadiens and the Dallas Stars. We're talking about the announcement that both Sergei Zubov and Guy Carboneau, former teammates of Craig's, are going to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, it's sort of fitting that they go into the Hockey Hall of Fame in the same class, Craig. You know, Zubov, a guy who is fantastically talented. Mike Modano calls him the most talented guy he's ever played with. And Guy Carboneau says, you know, Mike Modano, again, quoting him, you know, thank you for teaching me what it took to win. You know, when you played on that team, you sort of see these two guys who are so skilled, but in slightly different ways. How does that impact the dressing room? You know, one who's a magician and one who just is a magician, not necessarily offensively, but in the way they're able to both control a game.
Yeah, and they did it in different ways. I mean, Carbo slowed the game down. You know, and again, he wasn't a player. He wasn't going to beat anybody with his speed, but his position, and you knew, and I think in today's game, you know, it's all about go, 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 and get there as quick as you can. And Carbo was a thinker. And, you know, you look at the way he defended, even in his own zone, and when we played together. I mean, we were both kind of known for being able to block some shots, and we'd hear from other teams and other players when we were both on the ice, very rarely was going to get to our goaltender, but very rarely did it make it past Carbo. And he didn't play up tight on a defenseman, the offensive defenseman, because he had the ability to know where he wanted to shoot it. That's what I was talking about. So much of what you do when you defend, you want to be able to get to a spot and take their number one play away. And as defensemen, offensive ones especially, they want to find a way to get it to the net or get it onto somebody's tape. And Carbo had that vision, and he knew where a player wanted to get it to, and he took it away right away. And so he became a frustrating kind of guy to play against. And not only that, I mean, and he wasn't the biggest guy in the league either, but he was so damn tough on faceoffs and draws. And, you know, besides leadership, I think another thing you obviously have to throw in there to describe him is the competitiveness. I mean, he wanted to compete every game, every practice, and those are the kind of guys that you want to have around your teammates. And all it does is, you have guys that, you know, will say, do as I say, not as I do. And that probably would go for Zuby, because you didn't want to do as he did, because very few people could really do what he did. And so don't try to copy him. Just watch what he does, appreciate it, and get open for him, because he'll find you. And with Carbo, you know, Carbo, like I said, Carbo wasn't afraid to speak up. And so it could be do as I say and do as I do, because watch me play. And when Carbo had something to say, he wasn't afraid to step up in the ring, whether he had a letter on or not, and say something. And that came in not just later on in his career. It was there when he came into the league. And when you're sitting in a locker room where we were with Larry Robinson and Guy Lafleur and Bob Gainey and Steve Shutt and Mario Tremblay, I was like a church mouse. You know, I just sat there and I was just happy to be in the room. And, you know, Carbo could come in and he was able to speak his mind when he knew that the time was right, but he was able to back it up. And you know, there are two quality people that you need on teams to have success. And obviously they're, you know, we always say you typically win the Stanley Cup because of the best players on your team. That's the reason you win it, but you don't win it without the other guys. And Carbo may not have been one of the other guys, but he was definitely an important cog into the two cups that I was part of.
Craig, last question for you here, and moving to the present-day Dallas Stars. We should also mention it's the 20-year anniversary of that 99 Stanley Cup win over the Buffalo Sabres. But, you know, you used to be an analyst for the Stars. I know you still live in the Dallas Arlington area, and the Stars bought out Valerie Nichushkin today. They recently signed Esselin Dill, specifically because you were part of that great decor there with Sergei Zubov, with Darian Hatcher, Richard Matvichuk. When you look at that Stars decor now, you've got obviously led by John Klingberg, Miro Heiskanen probably should have been a finalist for the Calder Trophy. You know, when you're looking at that Stars defense, How does it compare to, you know, some of those defense cores that Dallas had back in the day? And is that not looking just like a great defense? It's shaping up so nicely here with all of that young talent that Jim Montgomery's got there.
Yeah, I think so. In a different way, though, also, again, because we all know it's a different time. And you know, we had some bigger defensemen, and there was a little bit more physicality that was in our game. And we tried to play that way. With today's game, it's more about speed. And I think the first one you look at that would kind of be in our neighborhood would be Esa Lindell. And, you know, he probably isn't the guy that goes out there and he's the most physical player, but he's a strong kid. He goes into the corner, and very rarely are you going to lose a battle with him. And, you know, and then if you want to compare Klinger to, I mean, so many times we've compared some of the skills that Klinger has to Zubov. And I'm never going to put him in that category yet, but he has the ability to slow the game down, and he can play east-west. And Zuby was such an east-west kind of player. And, you know, he could play 25, 30 minutes, but it was the way that he controlled his skating. And he controlled the game, and he controlled it playing east-west. And very rarely did he get hit. But, yeah, I think if you look at Klingberg and Heiskanen, oh, man, I can tell you, he is a treat. He's got a ways to go when it comes to defending, but I tell you what, the skill and the talent that he has and his skating ability is incredible. He just kind of floats up the ice, and you can see him against some of the faster players in the league. And if you know who they are and you watch him skate, and all of a sudden he just pulls away from everybody as he moves up through the ice. So he's only going to continue to get better. And so those three, Klingberg, Lindell, Heiskanen, and I think there's some good news hopefully on the horizon here. It seems like Steven Johns is, you know, getting into some practices, and hopefully, you know, he missed a lot of time obviously last year and concussion problems, but I'll tell you what, if he can be healthy, I had Steven Johns as easily a top four defenseman a couple years ago, and he's the size and skating ability, and there's your physical presence. He loves to hit. He led the team
2 years ago and hits and shots and block shots. And so, you know, he can do a lot of things when he's healthy. So it would be a great bonus for the Stars if he comes back and they bring Pollock back with that grit back there. So, you know, there's room for another, you know, number four, number five in there. And they're definitely going in the right direction as the D group goes.
Craig Ludwig won a Stanley Cup with the Montreal Canadiens. He won a Stanley Cup with the Dallas Stars. Craig, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good day.
Our pleasure, Craig. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning, we'll give our opinion of the Hockey Hall of Fame inductees. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
For an athlete, like a hockey player, this is the holy grail. This is the highest that you can go, so to speak, in being amongst the best players in the world, male and female. It is a real honor. Maybe it's just sort of soaking in what a big deal it is for so many people reaching out and just all the congratulations. But I never dreamt of this as a little girl growing up playing hockey. I dreamt of winning a Stanley Cup and an Olympic gold medal. So when it happens, you realize the moment, and it's pretty special.
That's 2019 Hockey Hall of Fame inductee member Haley Wickenheiser addressing the media after her announcement that she's going in alongside Sergei Zubov and Guy Carboneau. And of course, we know that in the builder category, it's going to be legendary Boston College head coach Jerry York and Jim Rutherford, longtime general manager of the Hurricanes and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Congratulations.
What about no love for Vaclav Nedomansky?
Pardon me. Of course, he's going. The Big V is also going in. He was the first Russian player to actually defect to the NHL.
And he was also born the same year you were, 1944.
Now that's a joke.
I'm not sure that was
gold,
a joke.
Dave, gold.
Yeah. Anyways, congratulations to all of the inductees in this year's class. And I mean, Haley Wickenheiser was a no-brainer.
I love the fact that she was in a med school class and writing an exam and couldn't actually take the call,
yeah,
telling her that she had gotten
She would have failed the exam, yeah, had she answered the phone at that point in time. In case you thought that you've been productive in your life,
yeah,
she is both a gold medal winning Olympian hockey player, one of the greatest.
Three-time.
One of the, yeah, greatest female hockey players of all time, if not the greatest. She's a coach.
No, she's the greatest.
I'm not arguing with
you. Do you remember back in the day, and I don't know how many people thought of this, but Bob Clark is on the Hall of Fame selection committee. So is Mark Chipman, by the way.
Yes.
And you remember back in the day, I don't know if it was the late 90s, early 2000s, I forget, when Haley Wickenheiser was actually an invitee to Flyers training camp. You guys remember that?
I don't, but I'm going to take your word for it.
And she's also the only person, the only female to ever play pro. It was the Finnish second league.
Something
remember
like
she
that.
She played pro in Finland. So, I mean, yeah, best female hockey player of all time.
Certainly.
And let's take away the female. She's just one of the best hockey players of all time.
Yeah. I mean, she is fantastic. I mean, she's still involved in the game, of course, with the Toronto Maple Leafs as an assistant in their organization. And, I mean, that was a great story. The fact that she was taking a med school exam at the exact same time.
Did you know she was in med school?
No, I had no idea. I mean,
it's amazing.
I just assumed that she was going to, you know, spend her career in hockey. And she's like, no, you know, I really think I need to be a doctor.
Well, no, she still works for the Leafs.
I know.
Like, she was named as an inductee, Dave. And then, like, 2 days later, she was at Leafs dev,
yeah,
camp.
No,
right?
I know. So, I think it just goes to show you that her love for the game is significant. I mean, the picture she tweeted out of her as a young child playing hockey on a backyard rink. I mean, it's a testament to her commitment to the game.
We have a book at home that I read to my daughter about sort of great females and female accomplishments in the world, and Haley Wickenheiser is certainly front and center in that book. So congratulations to her and all the inductees for the 2019 Hockey Hall of Fame class.
By the way, I just read my daughter recipe books.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on IllegalCurve.com. It's available for download on TSN1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review. Let us know what you think about the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.